Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A woman with a history of infidelity disappears into the fog during a morning run. Her husband, a psychotherapist by trade, clutches at clues and confusion, memories and suspicion. Mr. Catherine is the debut novel of author Stacey M. Jones. It's part thrill ride and part character study, and it's a look at who we are and who we're capable of becoming. You can meet the author tonight at the Full Circle Book Co-op in downtown Sioux Falls, and she's joining us today in the STPB Sioux Falls studio. Stacey, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also tonight at the Full Circle Book Co-op, you can meet novelist Jay Rood. He's former dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Northern State University. His PhD in medieval literature helped inspire a quest of his own to contribute to the literary retelling of the author Arthur stories, thereby weaving his own voice into the tapestry of legend. His fourth book in the Merlin Mystery series is called Lost in the Quagmire. Jay Rood is married to Stacey M. Jones, and both authors join us today ahead of their book signing in Sioux Falls. Jay, thanks for being here as well.
Well, I'm really happy to be here.
And both, welcome back to South Dakota. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
All right. So, Stacey, I want to start with you because this is a story that you lived with for a long time.
Yes.
How did you get from, because a lot of authors are living that same, like, I have this story, I have this work, I've not quite finished for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. How did you get from this idea won't go away to this idea is a book in my hand?
Well, I did have the idea, and it was something that kind of played in my head for a long time. But then I took a novel writing class, so I had a deadline. And that's how it got done. The class was structured so that we had to write 4,500 words a week to get all the points. Yeah. And so every week I had to show up with more text done. And we also had to write the entire story of the novel, even if it wasn't completely finished out. So I wrote the novel in a semester.
All right. So what about the idea in this story of Mr. Catherine wouldn't go away for you?
I think I was really interested. I've been interested for, I think, since my early 20s when I read, you know, those beautiful books, The Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton, mm-hmm. and, of course, Madame Bovary. And I was really interested in that kind of examination of a marriage, mostly because I started to realize that not only do you not understand other people's marriages, the people in the marriage don't understand their marriage. And so what I wanted to do was take a conflict like infidelity and then really explode it with a crime so that the characters in the book could examine the marriage more closely and maybe find a way to understand the marriage they were in.
Did you find, I mean, there's value in the deadline?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's value in finishing. Did you find there was a value in the delay, in the incubation time?
Absolutely.
I know you didn't delay for, you know, 40 mm-hmm. years or anything like that. I mean, I don't mean to exaggerate how long you had this idea, but I want to get at is this idea of having an idea that sort of percolates. Mm-hmm. What's the value of that?
Well, I call that pre-writing, and
I call a lot of things pre-writing.
I know, me too. What are you doing? Polishing your nails? Pre-writing.
Pre-writing. Yeah.
I think there is, because I started working for myself as a market researcher, so I was home all day a lot by myself, and I would just kind of play that story in my mind, and then when I would come to a part that I didn't like or wasn't gratifying to me or didn't kind of light up my mind in that way, I'd just back up and start playing it over. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to that part, see what came of it. And so I think, you know, our minds are working on these creative things all the time, even if we're not sitting and typing or writing things down. And doing that for me kept that story in my mind and kept it kind of getting richer and richer. And then when the deadline came, I just had to commit to it and start working it out.
Tell us about this choice of Mr. Catherine, which is the title, and this is a man who is in a marriage who is the identity of his own name. You know, he's identified through her.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little insight into that.
Well, it's twofold. Partly, when I started writing the book, the other characters' names were very clear to me. They kind of came to me named, you might say, but I could never fix on a name for him that didn't seem like it was stuck on him. It just didn't resonate with me or feel right. And so I thought, I have to keep writing, so I'm just going to write around it until I can figure out a name. And then it kind of became a challenge to myself. Like, can I do this without it seeming really obvious and clunky? And then one of my favorite books is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, and mm-hmm. the narrator in that book is never named either. And so then I thought, well, it's really a nice homage to that book, which I really love, and is a kind of domestic suspense and mystery as well. Yeah.
Domestic suspense, I like that. We're going to bring Jay Root into the conversation, and your latest book, Lost in the Quagmire, is a part of this passion you have for King Arthur and Lancelot and all these characters that we sort of know but don't know. How do you approach this from you know, what some people would call a historical, you know, approach, or is it more imaginative? And, you know, how do you enter this world as a writer, not just a scholar?
Well, there is one kind of school of Arthurian literature that's produced nowadays that tends to be particularly interested in history, and I don't really like that approach for myself, because Arthur isn't historical.
Right.
He's legendary.
It's hard to even use that word, but
yeah, I mean, there is a historical period in which the legend of King Arthur first began, but and that's the early 6th century, but the stories about Arthur really became popular in the 12th and 13th centuries. And so I set my novels during that time, which is the time of the popular romances of Arthur. So they're not historical in that sense. They're historical in that they're set roughly around 1200. And so the customs and things that occur in the book are from that period.
Because you're bringing your scholarship into this too. This isn't just, you know, someone who, when they were 10, really liked The Sword and the Stone, and now I'm going to write about it. There's a lot of research and scholarly work that has gone into the imaginative portion of crafting fiction.
Yeah, that's my pre-writing, I guess, is years and years
PhD in medieval literature. Yeah,
yeah. I've got a PhD in medieval literature, and years and years of reading virtually dozens, at least, if not hundreds, of versions of the Arthurian legend, and I just was kind of immersed in it. So I had some ideas about how I really got the idea of the series after reading Brother Cadfael, the whole series of Ellis Peters' books, which are set in the 12th century in England. And Brother Cadfael is a kind of medieval sleuth. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, it would be interesting to put that kind of mystery in the context of the Arthurian legend, and clearly the best sleuth for Arthurian times would be Merlin, because he's the smartest. and so I wanted to do that, but I also wanted to make sure that the story I told was essentially true to the basic myth of Arthur as it's come down to us, particularly in Thomas Malory.
Right. Why are we so captivated still with these characters? Because when you want to be true to this, part of it is because the number of people are going to call you out if you're not.
Especially
right?
People who know me
as
fellow medievalists.
So it has to offer us something so significant today as humans. It's not just escapism.
No. Oh, but part of it is. I mean, part of it is just a romanticized past.
Okay.
But there's also... It's very true that the story would not have lasted as long as it has, and it's lasted for 1,000 years, if there wasn't something in it that appealed to people's basic humanity. And it has everything. It has love, especially. It has honor and courage and chivalry and loyalty, and it deals with all those themes.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I try to do that in the books too.
There always seems to be there's something that can be lost when you think of Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And, you know, if you say this could put everything at stake, you know, the idea of the Round Table cracking, the idea of, you know, these things happening, that we have this sense of, you know, of such value over what these people were trying to accomplish that we treasure it somehow.
Yeah, and that's true. Those are the ideals of chivalry and the ideals that made the Round Table. And the Round Table does ultimately fall.
Right.
And it falls because of human fallibility, and it falls because the people who made it great also were human and they had human faults. Mm. So it's a story that's universal.
Not unlike the institution of marriage, right?
It falls
because the people are humans and have human, human. So let's talk a little bit about being in a partnership where you're in a relationship, but also you're in a writing relationship with each other. How do you support and challenge one another as writers? Stacey, you first, please.
Well, he's a really good model because he's very dedicated to his daily word count, which I am not as good at. So I'll see him somewhere in the house every day, kind of, you know, working on his 500 or 1,000 words. So it is always a reminder to me. But most of all, for me, he's been an invaluable reader of my work. So when I was revising the book after I wrote it for the class, he read it very carefully and gave me line edits and suggested things and said, I don't understand this, or maybe this could work here. And to have a reader like that who isn't trying to write the book they would write if they wrote your book, but understands the book you're writing and helps you make it better is, I don't know how you could do it without that. So that was really key to me, getting it revised enough to send it out on submission.
Yeah. And Jay, same question about Stacey. What is that relationship sort of like? How has it supported you in your writing, and how are you, you know, sort of that connectivity?
Well, for one thing, she's an inspiration to me because Guinevere is based in large part on her.
You dedicate this book to your Guinevere, and this is your wife.
Yeah. Well, she's also my she's also my Rosamund, who's the true love of the narrator's life. If you know her well, you probably see some of her catchphrases and some of the characters. but besides that, of course, it's nice having her there supporting me. But she's I'll say the same thing about her. She's a great reader. She was a copy editor at a newspaper for many years, so she's really good at finding any little thing that needs correcting. But also, it's the same sort of give and take with some of the edits, and you know, something could happen here. I really don't like the beginning of the book. That's what she told me. With which one was it? Was it this one?
I think it was this one.
Yeah. You like it now?
So I completely changed that. And
tell us a little bit, Jay, about the character, some of the characters in this particular book, because. Gildas
is the narrator. He's sort of the Dr. Watson of the series to Merlin's Sherlock Holmes. Merlin is the smartest person in the room, but I also tried to make him not just a magical person, but somebody that you could understand from a modern perspective. He's got a kind of a scientific way of looking at things. He doesn't believe in a lot of hooey. he believes in thinking of things logically. There's a tradition of Merlin that he was a seer, kind of a prophet, which goes way back to Geoffrey of Monmouth in the 12th century. And what I did was make him have kind of migraine headaches or spells. And when he gets those, he babbles something kind of that doesn't make sense at the time, but then turns out later when you look at it to be, that solves the mystery.
Somehow there was a connection.
He's had it in his head, and he's kind of gone over it, and then somehow it comes out in a way that people don't understand until they do at the end, and when they figure the mystery out.
Yeah, which also brings that sense of what all of us are, you know, that sense that we know the truth, that we know the answers, we know the solutions, if we can pause and hear the thoughts that, you know, listen to your life and what it's trying to tell you.
Yeah.
We connect
with these
stories. Or
in this case, listen to the evidence. Listen. and then, of course, King Arthur is a character, but more important is Guinevere, because Guinevere is Gildas, the narrator, was at one time a page in the household of Queen Guinevere. He's that in the first book in the series, Fatal Feast. So he knows her better than anybody around. He also is in love with her chief lady-in-waiting, whose name is Rosamond, who's in this book married to Sir Mordred, who, if you know the Arthurian legend, is not a good person to be married to. And then, of course, there's Lancelot as the queen's lover.
Yes, right. We're all in now. Stacey and I are sitting back and like, just tell us the whole story. Okay, you can read the book. So, Stacey, tell me a little bit about this your narrator, in the sense that we see Catherine in the beginning. Mm-hmm. She's a little unreliable in the sense that already our male narrator is telling us about the deception that she's put mm-hmm. him through in the past. Mm-hmm. In our remaining minute, really, something about why it was wonderful to work with him and the sort of loosely defined unreliable narrator, if I can call him that.
Well, I think it was mostly interesting to me because he is a psychotherapist, but he lacks his own level of self-awareness. So once he comes into the story, the drama of what's happening around him, you start to see that he's cracking a little bit in terms of facing things. And
all right, the books. We're just giving you a taste today, Mr. Catherine and Lost in the Quagmire, Stacey M. Jones and Jay Rood. You can see them tonight at the Full Circle Book Co-op in downtown Sioux Falls. What time?
7:30.
7:30. Be there. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You.